Hello, and welcome to the Golden Thread Conversations. I'm your host, Judy Murdoch. Today, our guest is Laura Lundeen. Laura is the founder and head coach of the Corporate Compassion Project, a boutique executive coaching practice that helps purpose-driven women achieve more fulfillment, recognition, and impact in their careers. Before founding her own mission-driven business, Laura had a 20-year career in corporate social responsibility, communications, and marketing. Laura is passionate about the performing arts and preparing the next generation of purpose-driven leaders, as demonstrated by her board and volunteer service. So Laura, hey, welcome.
Thanks, Judy. Thanks for having me.
So the thing that really caught my eye was the name of your business, Corporate Compassion Project, because having been myself, I had probably about a 20-year career in corporate, you know, with working with some really large companies, and compassion is not a word that typically falls into the typical corporate culture, right? It's, you know, usually just sort of shut up and do your job and, you know, make your boss happy. So I'm really curious, how did this coaching business come into being?
Well, as you mentioned, I had this 20-year career in corporate America, and I really loved what I was doing for a lot of reasons, communications, marketing, working with a lot of mission-driven businesses to change mostly customer behavior, encouraging healthy eating, encouraging health behavior, positive health behaviors.
Oh, wow.
I felt like I was using my powers for good, I guess,
right.
When thinking about motivation and behavior change and how to tell compelling stories,
right,
about, you know, to encourage both of those things.
Right.
And it was a few years ago when I started thinking about the change that I was helping to make in the world. And I started to go through this evaluation process of how exactly that was aligned with what I, you know, envisioned my future to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought that over the years, you know, my why, my purpose, all of that had evolved. And it was time for my career to evolve with it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I thought about the change that I really wanted to see in the world, it was a lot more kindness,
mm-hmm.
a lot more mm-hmm. compassion,
yeah,
a lot more treating people like people.
Yes.
And
yes.
So, and then when I thought about where I had the most experience in terms of culture, corporate America was top of mind. And so I decided to start there.
Mm-hmm.
I went through a pretty rigorous coaching certification process,
mm-hmm.
and that took about a year, and then started practicing within my own role at my previous company. I had a great team that was the source of a lot of inspiration for what I'm
That's
doing
really
now.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, and the rest is history. I left my job to take some time off and mm-hmm. then start my practice. But that's really the journey in a nutshell.
So you kind of, it sounds like initially you started as in it, like kind of doing internal coaching. Is that correct? So you were working with people in your own company.
I was still in a corporate social responsibility capacity within mm-hmm. a communications team. And so the coaching really, it was something I pursued on my own as an interest, mm-hmm. 'cause I wanted to be a better leader, a better
right.
manager, to grow for personal development, as well as to benefit my team.
Mm-hmm.
And then when, you know, a couple years went by where I was just, you know, using my coaching skills as a manager. And when I thought about the difference that I really wanted to make, it was doing more of that
mm-hmm.
and helping other leaders
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
discover their purpose and
right.
develop their own leadership style to better become better leaders for the next generation of purpose-driven women.
Yeah, no, I think that's really, I think the specific area of leadership in particular, it's one of those things where, you know, I've been around for a long time. And for as long as I've been around, the topic of leadership is always really potent. You know, it's always like, you can't really be a business major, or there are other majors as well, where you're going to learn about leadership in one way or the other. So you may learn about types of leaders, you know, leadership styles, that type of thing. I always felt that most of what I learned about leadership really focused on the structural leadership. So the authority that you have as a leader, you know, which, you know, that's defined to a large degree by the type of job you have, to some degree by, you know, what the people above you will or will not let you do. But there's also like a type of leadership, which I think it begins internally with your own priorities, your own values. And I'm not going to bring politics into this too much, okay? I promise. But there was a really interesting conversation about how some politicians are not really being leaders so much as they're being just whatever it is that their base wants. Most of their effort is going into keeping their base happy and kind of like giving them the red meat that the base seems to want. And, you know, that to me, that's not leadership to me. You know, that's just pandering.
Well, and I think, you know, to close the loop on the political reference, I think we see that on both sides. You know, and so we're seeing this trend in so many areas of our lives, politics, you know, and the corporate world. And it's really a lack, I think, of exactly what you talked about, this understanding of our own personal motivations, priorities, and values, staying true to those, and then helping other people to find theirs and define them.
Yes. So I wanted to ask you more about the process you use, and you don't need to go into a lot of depth, but I am interested in kind of at a high level, when somebody comes to you, do people find you? Do you typically get referrals and that type of thing?
Yeah. So I usually get referral clients through people that know me, know my style, and are basically making matches with people who they know who are looking for support. I also do a lot of social media writing on the LinkedIn platform.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, it really appeals. To be honest with you, I was beating myself up because I'm not this like laborious writer who goes into great detail and for blogs and stuff like that. But I'm more than a Twitter soundbite. And so I found LinkedIn to be a really useful platform for my type of expression, which, you know, is typically less than 1300 characters, thankfully. So it works out. So that's usually how people find me, either through referrals or through LinkedIn.
Okay.
And my clients so far are two different types of mid-career women. Women who are either wondering what's next in their career, like the promotion, is it a new job, and need help really defining what it is in order to make a plan to then go after it. The other type of client knows they want to transition and want some support and accountability in making it happen.
Okay, interesting. Just thinking about that. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah,
I'm curious, I'm thinking myself, like within the corporation itself. I'm thinking about the multitude of dynamics that make it really challenging to, I guess I'm thinking about a more traditional corporate career where you are being promoted into areas of greater responsibility, authority, able to just have more influence on what happens. And I'm curious, how do you help people? Because some of the really, the hardest issues I had to deal with when I was in corporate were working with difficult bosses. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of them out there. And, you know, one of the comments you made, I think, as we were starting was this idea of your job is to make your boss look good. And the two worst bosses I had were both women. And both of them knew at some level that they were, their careers were in trouble. They weren't proceeding. And there was a sort of a franticness, about having to do whatever it takes to prove their value to their boss, right? So that was really, I'm just saying from a very objective perspective, that was what was going on. And so their subordinates were basically tools to help them get there. And I'm a very independent person, and I don't like, being micromanaged. I like somebody telling me what needs to be done and trusting I'll figure it out, and I'll ask questions if I don't know. And these particular bosses always felt, it felt for me literally as though they were trying to like take their hands and get them underneath my skin to make me do things. It was just, but there was just always this really strong vibe of a little bit of desperation, like you are here to make me look good. And it felt really awful. I mean, it just made my job sort of a nightmare. So how do you help people when they have a difficult boss or some sort of one of those, like there's a toxic person I have to deal with? I'm assuming this comes up quite often.
It absolutely does. Yeah. And that is, so it's interesting because I'm currently working with people on both sides of that equation, first of all. Mm-hmm. So in case of the person who you described, your one of your former bosses, the opportunity there is to help them develop some self-awareness and really, in a lot of cases, confidence to know what they're good at, to put their best foot forward, to gain clarity on why they're doing the job that they're doing, their higher purpose, to make sure that it's still a good fit. And that sometimes the companies contract with me to support those types of clients. Other times those types of clients find me because, to your point, they're not getting promoted because of some issues with executive presence. So we work on that. Or there's high turnover on their team and, they need help to understand why that could be. Mm-hmm. So there's certainly that side of the equation, and a lot of compassion comes in. Because oftentimes that boss is failing to see compassion for themselves.
Yes, I think that's a great point. I agree with you.
When they can't have compassion for themselves, then they can't have compassion for their team members. They can't support them properly. Mm-hmm. And so that's the problem, actually, that I set out to solve. Now, to the other side of the equation, there's the team member who's just feeling completely micromanaged and like they can't do anything right, frustrated, like their own career is being stifled.
Right.
And, you know, so for those types of clients, we go through a very similar process, and that is to define their own values, their own priorities, their own purpose in order to set boundaries and identify those things in their careers that are most important to them to make sure that, again, they're in the right role. You know, is it just the boss? Is it the entire team? What about the values of the company? All of these things come into play. And when you're feeling like a square peg in a round hole, I think it's important to look holistically. You know, before you decide to take this job and shove it, make sure that there's not another team that would be a good fit, or another department, or, you know, et cetera. So,
Yeah, no, I did. I actually did go through that process of doing some really serious. I had a career counselor at the time, and she was extremely helpful in that. And eventually I did leave, because I realized that where the company was and the values that I was seeing just wasn't going to work out for me.
And that's entirely possible. I never go into an engagement unless somebody has engaged me as a peer career coach to help them make a career transition. I never go into an engagement assuming that their role is a bad fit or their company is a bad fit.
Right.
Cause that's not always the case. A lot of times you can grow in your current role.
For sure.
But something needs to change. It just might not be the job.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. It's interesting that in both cases where I had bosses who eventually, I felt that my only option was to leave, and I felt that there was something about the corporate culture that was not going to work for me. One company went through a really serious contraction and fired about 50% of their employees. It was an ad agency. The other one ended up getting bought out by another company, and then they fired my entire the department I had worked for. So I think that there sometimes is a there's some karma in there about, like, sometimes it's the universe just giving you, you know, like some hints that it would be better for you to move on. I wanted to ask you about, again, working with the toxic bosses, and how often do you find that they are open to trying things differently? Because that, for myself at least, was in thinking about the bosses I've had, I really wasn't under the impression that they were very open to change. They seemed pretty attached to their management style, and almost seemed to have, you know, like a like unbudging belief that the way they did things was the way to do things.
Yeah, that's actually really common. So oftentimes those clients are, those come to me through their employer, to try and work through some of those issues. At the same time though, there are some, you know, I'm thinking of one specific client who identified that her behavior was incentivized by the
company. Oh, interesting. Very interesting.
And so she, but at the same time, you know, she was in this blame cycle of like blaming her team for certain things that were happening, never looking inward to understand exactly why she had so much turnover, why her 360s were what they were. But because the company never really did anything to incentivize her behavioral change, it actually took a really difficult situation with one of her team members to encourage her to get help dealing with her team. So she was not initially incentivized for a behavioral change, but this employee
That's
got
great.
So difficult to work with. She herself sought out support.
Interesting. That's the point that you're making is actually a really astute one. Because I've heard more than once that, you know, sort of people issues in an organization, you know, there's a really strong temptation to say it's the person, there's something about them. But I've had a few, more than one, you know, pretty savvy person tell me it's really important to look at the structure of the company and what are they getting rewarded for. And in thinking about one of the managers I worked with, she was heavily incentivized to get stuff done. You know, that was like, it was sort of like the higher your output, the better a job you're doing, which is very, you know, and her boss was a very kind of get stuff done sort of person, you know, like get the boxes checked. And so I can see how that particular situation probably, you know, exacerbated, you know, what was already a tendency in this particular manager.
Absolutely. Yeah, corporate culture is fascinating. And that's another side of my right. business, working with teams on cultural change, starting mm-hmm. from self-awareness, emotional intelligence, learning about work styles and communication styles of our colleagues mm-hmm. to better support them. Mm-hmm. And but culture is fascinating, and the reward system is important to note. And that's why when I'm working with clients, it's important for them to identify what's important to them mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. understand how that aligns or doesn't with mm-hmm. their organization's culture.
That's interesting.
Until you define what it is you yourself want and value right. and prioritize, you don't know whether or not you're aligned. Mm-hmm. But then when you can make mm-hmm. that comparison, then you can see, you know, what is changeable, what is in your control,
right.
and what is not. And,
right.
you know, then we start having a different kind of conversation.
That is really interesting. I one of the things that comes across loud and clear from you is how important it is to start within and get really, really clear and have a really strong understanding of who you are and what matters to you. And
yeah.
And that was like one of the things that when I made a transition between consumer marketing into technical writing. That was something that was really important for me, was to start learning about how some of the things I valued were not the things that the department I worked in valued. And that was really helpful. It was really, it was eye-opening and it was empowering. And
yeah.
it just helps to know it's not you. It's just the sort of environment you're in.
Exactly. And that same environment can work just fine for somebody
exactly.
else.
Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. I have another thing I'm curious about. I'd like to get your perspective on it. I am curious. Well, I've got two questions. So I'm going to start with the former. So this is a slightly different question. But we were talking about systems in companies, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I am really fascinated by with, you know, kind of like a capitalist system in corporations, is that whenever, every once in a while, somebody will say something like, why are these corporations so horrible? Why do they do these things? And, you know, the answer is typically because corporations are rewarded for increasing shareholder wealth, you know? That's just the accounting. That's the way it works. And so from my perspective, that almost sets you up to fail in a way, because It feels to me like I can see how there are times where you can show a company that by being more humane, more compassionate, and so on, it actually is helpful to their bottom line. Because I don't believe the two are incompatible necessarily. But it does seem to me that if a company is motivated only to increase shareholder wealth or whatever wealth they're trying to increase, it seems at some point there's going to be a point of conflict and you just can't get past it. And I'm curious on your end, how do you work with that?
This is one of my favorite topics of conversation.
Woo-hoo! I'm so glad I brought it up then.
Yeah. And it's one of my favorites because it really is the intersection of what I did and what I do. So my previous role, I made this transition from marketing communications into corporate social responsibility because I believed exactly what you just said, that there is a huge intersection between companies and brands doing well by doing good.
Right, and that, exactly.
And companies, businesses exist to provide value to stakeholders, whether that's their customers or their communities, and to provide something that is useful and of service.
Yeah, you are preaching to the choir.
Right, I'm sure. Yeah. Based on the question,
no, totally I agree with you. Right.
And so I wanted to support companies who cared about that and believed the same thing I did. And so that's how I chose my field. Now I want to support leaders who believe that as well. And I want them to be successful. And that's why I focus on the type of person that I do with my clientele. Mm-hmm. But you're right. There is that rub there that it's not a seamless integration. And what I believe strongly, however, is over the past 10 years, we've been experiencing this transition into a consumer-driven change for businesses. So, you know, with Gen X, millennials, and now Gen Z, I think customers are demanding that brands and companies do better with the environment, do better in treating their employees with dignity and respect, and do better with coming out with products that meet actual needs, you know, aren't just superfluous and adding to the noise and clutter of the world. Mm-hmm. And I think people are voting with their wallets. I think employees are voting with their talent.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
You know, because the bottom line for companies, that connection is to sales, you know, customers buy from brands that they know, like, and trust.
Right.
And with the workforce. So when labor market is tight, they need to recruit and retain top talent. Mm-hmm. And people want to work for brands that matter, that care, that are doing something important because they want to be doing something important.
Right. Yeah. I was going to ask you actually about that particular, you segued right into the second question that I had, which was whether you were noticing a shift in values because, you know, based on the very tiny sample size of younger people I know, they just seem to think about jobs very differently than I did. You know, when I'm a baby boomer. And so when I was moving into the workforce, you know, for me, it was just about, you know, being a happy corporate warrior and doing whatever was expected of me or required of me to be successful in the job. And I'm finding that, you know, like these younger generations, they want to be successful, but not at the cost of their, you know, like they're not willing to give their souls, you know, sell their souls to their work.
Absolutely.
Well, I have a grown son now who is a work. He's doing. He's in information technology and works for a small company, but it's just really interesting to me that he really likes what he does and he likes the company he works for, but I have never heard him. I mean, fortunately, it's not asked of him, but you know, I think it's pretty clear that he's not going to sort of give his life over in order to be successful for this company.
Absolutely. And I'm at the tail end of Gen X. And so I tend to align more, I think, with millennial thinking when it comes to mm-hmm. the workplace and, you know, its place in your life. Mm-hmm. And I think that your observation, even with the limited sample size,
my limited sample,
spot on. And that's where I saw where finally, at this point in my life, in this point of the world and the world of work's development, it was the perfect time for me to do what I'm doing now. And mm-hmm. that is mm-hmm. to help companies and employees align on purpose and priorities. I don't think at any other time in history have we seen such a demand from the workforce for meaning in their work lives.
Right.
You know, yes. to your point, you know, right. I think with the baby boomer generation, it was all about like, get the good job, get the good money, you know, provide for your family and just say right. thank you.
Well, we were raised by depression babies. And so if you are, and also, you know, like I would say, like a good number of baby boomers are old enough to have been raised by, you know, potentially first generation immigrants. And so the values were very, and they also went through World War II. So the values are security was everything.
Yep.
You know, wanted to like have any wild adventures because it was like, hey, you know, like I stormed the beaches in Normandy on D-Day and I've had all the adventure I want to have for the rest of my life, you know?
For sure. Well, yeah. And it's funny because like, you know, growing up as a late stage Gen Xer, my workforce reality was driven by recessions, layoffs. Mm,
true. Good point.
No more pensions, no yeah, more, you know, there was, so the security, like the safety net of a secure employment right. situation, we basically had the rugs pulled out from underneath.
You're right.
And I'm not trying to boo-hoo for my generation.
No, I'm not hearing that at all. That's your reality.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is Gen X was the beginning of these like independent consultants and entrepreneurs, like huge booms in, you know, now with people in their 40s and 50s. And it is, I think it's just a reality. We had to be independent. We had to fend for ourselves as children and then as working adults. And it's just life. And, you know, you deal with it and this is how we do. And it's, and so it's so refreshing to see this like evolution of the workplace being driven by millennials and now mm-hmm. Gen Z with having more of a community orientation, being very, I mean, they're forcing the mission, vision, and values to be actual reality, not just lip service.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And are really changing. They have the numbers, the population numbers, I think, to make a real change in the culture of corporations.
So I want to talk a little bit more now about women in the workforce, because I kind of entered the workforce in the 1980s, in the early 1980s. And there, by this time, there were a fair number of women in the workforce. I'm kind of curious about how do you see things evolving? Because, you know, like even now, I don't think anybody is going to argue that we, you know, like we have too many like women who are CEOs and that type of thing. And I'm just like, really, like, what is your perspective on that? I'm really curious.
Well, I think that after so many cultural social cultural movements over the past few years, you know, starting with Me Too and, you know, last year's Black Lives Matter movement.
Right.
I think we're seeing a lot more representation, or the need for representation, I should say. And for women specifically in the workforce, I think it's going to be a really interesting, it's going to be really interesting to see where the next few years takes us. I think that there's a recognition that we need more compassion and empathy in the workplace to respond to the changing demographic that we talked about earlier, and that women are very well equipped to lead in that way. Not all women, but many, just like many men are. And so we're seeing the opportunity, I think, for a different leadership style that comes maybe a bit more naturally for many women. So I'm hopeful that we'll see this shift in corporate culture that can be driven by these powerful, compassionate, and still results-oriented women leaders.
Oh, no, absolutely. I don't see those two things as mutually exclusive.
And that's what I was just going to say.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times, you know, and I don't know if this, you know, sometimes it's hard to understand what is specific to me as an individual in a corporate environment versus, you know, something that's more gender general. But what I often found is this stigma of being, of showing feeling or emotion in the workplace. That if you were kind to someone or stood up for someone in a meeting, you were being soft or sticking your neck out for no reason. Or
it's kind of questioning where your loyalties lie, I think.
Absolutely.
Right.
And so I think what we're seeing now is more openness to being a human at work. It was certainly something I always felt like that was a risk for me. I can't help but be who I am in most situations. And so when I found environments that were welcoming of, you know, an assertive woman in the workplace who also cared, I embraced that as I felt like I was being embraced. So, but there was definitely stigma associated with being a compassionate and emotional person in a corporate environment. So I'm hoping that also evolves, because I don't think that it inhibits results or performance. I think in a lot of ways it enhances both of those things.
I would think so, because I would imagine employees feel more heard, seen, and received as who they are by their bosses or team leads or whatever. And I think it helps people feel acknowledged and appreciated.
And that's the whole point. And so when you, I think, whenever it happened, you know, it was certainly before I entered corporate America, but we lost sight of the fact that like business is made up of people.
Isn't that weird? And it seems so obvious.
And business exists to serve people.
Right.
And it always comes back to like, these systems were created by people.
Right.
You know, And so this is something that fascinates me on an intellectual level.
Yeah, me too.
You know, it's like, how did we get here that we've so...
I kind of have a theory about
left
that.
Our humanity behind in the workplace.
I have a couple thoughts.
Oh, I'd love to
that.
Hear.
I'd be happy to share them with you. I think some of it is where did corporate culture come from, right? So one of them is military, you know, like, so it's pretty obvious if you look at the baby boomers, for example, many, many of these folks came out of some sort of a military experience. In fact, I thought it was really interesting at some point where I thought, you know, the military is actually more forward-thinking than a lot of corporations. I thought that was just rather fascinating. And I think the other thing is just the Industrial Revolution, you know, where it is so much easier if you're in a position of responsibility. It's an awful lot easier to be thinking about people creating widgets and just kind of like coming from it from that perspective than all of the messiness, you know. And I think you have to like to do kind of where you're at, the culture has like the people at the top have to finally say, you know, we're just going to embrace the messiness because these are human beings that are working for us. Not little, you know, like not little robots.
Agreed. And I think that change is only going to happen. It's going to happen gradually, and it's going to be driven by the workforce. I
I
think it's
agree.
going to be driven by the workforce and customers. You know, nobody wants to buy products made, you know, by a company that does not treat their employees fairly. Now, a lot of companies are hidden behind NDAs or employee agreements that prohibit employees from speaking out. You know, so that's still a challenge. But I think with social media and people's openness on social media, we're beginning to get a glimpse of what it's like to work inside these companies. Sites like Glassdoor or other career websites are demonstrating or are allowing anonymous employee reviews. And so you can go online and find out, you know, what it's really like inside these companies. Now, again, you have to, you know, it's kind of like the Yelp review for restaurants. You have to, you know, not everything is, you're not always getting the whole story or, you know, what rubs someone the wrong way, you're not maybe don't care so much about. So you have to, you know, go into
You
it with
have
an
to be
open mind.
discerning, right, in terms of like what's the motivation behind the review. I think that's a really good point. I know I got advice from somebody at some point, and one of the things that they suggested to me is talk to some people who don't work at the company anymore. You know, talk to somebody who maybe did not have a great experience. And you may run into resentment and bitterness on the part of that person. But I think it's useful, you know, to because when somebody is courting you, when a company is courting you and really wants you to work for them, they are going to try to paint as positive a picture as possible. So I think it's really I think it's useful to get a fairly wide perspective from a variety of people.
Absolutely. And, you know, something that I work with my clients to do, my job search clients, is to also learn how to read between the lines,
Yes,
you
that's
know?
excellent.
And
That's that intuition, right?
oh my gosh, intuition. And when I think about what has served me well, like at every twist and turn of my life, gut checks have been it. And so oftentimes we repress that, right? Like something's telling us, and then we ignore it.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I think I'm very intuitive, and I'm very good at reading people in situations. And quite often, if I had a kind of a twinge about something, like it could be something as simple it could be as simple as somebody who's like on your first day of work, somebody just got fired, you know, just things like that. But and that to me is like kind of like a really fun, juicy side, you know. I think people in general are just so fascinating, and I just love observing people, and you know, all that cool, quirky stuff that happens, and you know, like in any human organization.
Oh, it is. I think, you know, that sense of curiosity will serve people well. You know, and one of the things that I think is really important that is kind of the I work with almost every client on at the very beginning of our engagement is cultivating or rediscovering, I guess, that sense of curiosity without judgment.
And the
without judgment is key because, you know, if you're, I always say that, like, if you look hard enough for something, you will absolutely find it. You know, what I mean by that is if you're expecting a certain outcome or you're expecting something to be a certain way, whether it actually is that way or not, it will turn
it's
into
a self-fulfilling
that.
Prophecy. Right.
Correct.
Right. And that does, I think, I'm imagining on your end, that may often come back to, you know, kind of understanding the people that you're working with. I'm guessing we've all had bad experiences. Because your
curiosity.
There you are.
Oh, okay. I had to plug in.
It's okay.
Cool. Yeah. Curiosity without judgment is key.
Yeah. I want to ask you, so here we are, we're in a new year, 2021. Yay.
Finally.
I know. So what are you like, if you are thinking about, you know, the type of work that you do and the places that you're working with, you know, what are you excited about? I don't know if you yourself have any projects or things that you're feeling really psyched about, but are there things that you're just feeling, it doesn't have to be 2021, but just as you look into the future, you know, where do you feel excited?
Oh, geez, there's so many things, but I think first and foremost, what I'm finding is that 2020, with all of its crappiness in so many ways, actually provided such an incredible extended amount of time for people to sit with themselves and without the distraction of restaurants and musicals and, you know, all the things that we love to keep ourselves busy with our lives because, you know, they're part of who we are. Without that outside noise, in some ways, people were forced, many people were forced to sit with what their lives actually are.
Oh, good point.
And has forced it's forced a lot of really interesting perspectives and people actually asking the questions of themselves is like, is this really what I want? Is what I've created really who I am and representative of the change that I want to see in the world and how I want to be spending my time? So I'm really excited for that this year.
Yeah.
As we emerge from the quiet of 2020, this year gives those people who are interested in a new beginning the opportunity to create it.
Mm.
So thank you, Laura Lundeen, for being our guest today. And thank you for listening to the Golden Thread Conversations.